with that, oh, Carl, why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourself? So I don't know if everyone in the committee knows who you are and why you're on the committee.
Sure. Carl Hahnemann here, CEO of International Tower Hill Mines. We're working on building a gold project north of Fairbanks. I'm born and raised in Alaska, UAF graduate. Helped build a couple of mines in Alaska, including the large Pogo mine, and been very interested in the energy, power, and kind of rail belt challenges over the years. Followed it closely and look forward to doing what I can to help.
And I'm Robert Venables. I'm the executive director for Southeast Conference, who's been very involved with regional energy planning both in Southeast Alaska and across the states in partnership and under contract with the Alaska Energy Authority. So really pleased to be part of this task force that the governor's put together, a great group of folks and a strong support team, which we see here, and just interested to see where this ultimately takes us. This subcommittee here is perhaps a bit drier than some topics that other committees will be into, but nonetheless very important when we talk about addressing the cost of energy and the pace it takes to get it developed. So some introductions from the co-chairs, and I want to turn over to our facilitators to maybe introduce them and help us with the structure of the meeting and help us identify who's actually a member of the subcommittee and then who the guests are, and then we can kind of just go around the room and hear briefly an introduction from them if we could. So, Michael.
So thank you, Robert. My name is Michael Yaffe. I'm with Michael Baker and my colleagues on the call. We're essentially here to support the subcommittee, and then we were engaged by AEA to help facilitate the overall task force and the development of the plan. We also have Black & Veatch supporting this effort. They've been engaged through the governor's office. They'll be available for data energy modeling and technical assistance with data energy as we go, in addition to the data energy subcommittee. This is the first subcommittee that's meeting, so generally we like to give a lot of flexibility to the chairs and how they'd like to run this meeting. We provided an overall agenda, and then Carl and Robert, do you want to just quickly go through the roll call, and we can just go through and check members that are here? This is a public meeting that's being recorded, and I don't mind doing that, just going through the list that's on screen. Tony Izzo, if you're present.
Yes, good morning. Tony Izzo is here.
Isaac Vandenberg. Senator Click Bishop. Garrett Boyle.
Here.
Keith Cooper.
Here.
Representative George Rosher.
Here.
Karen Bell.
Yes, here.
Okay. And then Mark Lucan.
Yep, I'm here.
All right. And then Karin.
Good morning.
Okay. And then I see Jeff Baker with Michael Baker. And then Neek Rat with Michael Baker is also on supporting us. Was there anyone else that I didn't get to through the roll call? Okay, great. Just quickly, and Robert, Carl, just if it's okay with you, I just kind of quickly just going through some of the administrative things we wanted to just update the team, and then from there, if there's anything else that you want to go through, we can turn over for the subject matter presentation. And I apologize if I'm rushing through this. I just want to preserve time for the presentation and discussion. For this subcommittee, as it's going through, we do have the task force SharePoint site, and I'll share my screen later on when we start talking about the action item on, you know, action worksheets, but we'll give you kind of a rundown of the files, how they're set up, and how we intend to support the subcommittee. The big milestones that we want to get through the next time the task force meets, we want to have at least a high-level outline of the actions, programs, or policies this group is interested in kind of pursuing or discussing further. They don't have to be finalized by any means, just kind of a running, evolving list. And then we did have here just the action item, identify preferred name for the report section. That doesn't have to be finalized by this meeting at all, but just by the next task force meeting, I think we would want to have that. And I can circulate that name again. And if it's easier, we can kind of put it out to a poll in a future meeting if there's a preference. But I just wanted to flag that as a follow-up. And I do have the name. Let's see. I believe the name that we shared with Task Force was Promote Coordinated Governance of Energy Policy and Regulations, and I'm happy to share that post-meeting as well. So, as far as our updates, Carl and Robert, I'll turn it back over to you if there's any other kind of topics we wanted to discuss before we kind of roll into the presentation and the heart of this meeting.
No, I appreciate that. Thanks, Michael. And we didn't really go around the room. I don't know, you know, if we want to do that. I think for the most part, are we well known to each other, or should we take a moment to put each one kind of perspective, or maybe just open up for questions, just get right to the point of some of the data needs. So, does anyone have questions about the purpose and goals? Just stick with that portion there of the committee's work. Is it well understood what we're striving to do? Is there questions? Is there thoughts about the purpose and goals of the subcommittee? Do we need to clarify that anymore? Okay. Well, I guess the goal is to do better, quicker, and cheaper. So can we put that as a committee name?
There you go.
Well, and then we've got the SharePoint slide that's going to go there, and so you've kind of laid out some of the administrative sections, of what we'll be working towards. One of the things that I'm very interested in is trying to identify what the information is that we have. What is the known information? If we're to streamline, improve, make better, what is it that we're streamlining and improving and making better? And so a lot of the information that I'll be asking for and looking for at the end of the meeting is, what is known in Alaska as far as the processes, the timelines, the cost of that that's associated with that. I'm also going to flip back around and ask Michael Baker, who has strong experience across the country as to how we can not take a lot of time and effort reinventing wheels, what is working in other places that might be compatible. So that's just kind of my strategy from this point of the chair, but I would be interested in hearing if there are other expectations. And Carl, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but certainly would take any thoughts from the committee as well before we ask Mr. Oviedo for kind of the thoughts that on this topic the Alaska Power Association has. So, Carl, any thoughts?
Well, yes, thanks, Robert. I mean, specifically, I believe we need to listen to the thoughts of those that have been challenged by these issues for a long time and get that perspective before making sure we challenge ourselves to the, aggressive and or new thinking that might come out of this task force. So I don't want to get, I don't want to allow us to get sidetracked into just solving existing identified issues. We need to also include how do we facilitate what might be the vision of this group. And so So I don't want to belabor that. I really want to hear from those that have identified known challenges at the current time, and we'll just keep that in context as we think about our overall task force objectives.
Right. Thanks, Carl. And which is why we go first to the trade association for the utilities that grapple with this. And that's why we also have utilities on the subcommittee and on the task force to be able to kind of help frame that. So as a starting point, Mr. Oviedo, thank you for joining us. And we'd really appreciate whatever insights the Alaska Power Association has had. So maybe as a way of introduction, maybe just give us a little bit about APA, who you represent, and then your thoughts on the subcommittee's purpose, goals, and hoped for outcomes. But good morning.
Thanks, Robert. Good morning, everyone. I'm Michael Rubito. I'm the Deputy Director of Alaska Power Association. Crystal Inkthus, our Executive Director, sends her regards. She's on vacation, a well-deserved vacation right now, so I am taking this presentation. So Alaska Power Association, or APA, we're a 72-year-old trade association that represents the electric utilities in the state, and our members serve all the state, essentially, from Barrow, Utqiagvik, down through on Alaska, western Alaska through ABEC. We have members that serve the entire rail belt. Every rail belt utility is a member, and then down through the Inside Passage in southeast. The vast majority of our membership and the vast majority of the electric utilities in the state are either not-for-profit electric cooperatives or municipal utilities, tribal utilities as well. The tribal utilities don't represent a very large share of our membership. And then we do have a few investor-owned utilities, including Alaska Electric Light and Power, which serves Robert down there in Juneau. And so APA's goal essentially is to support our members as they work to get to provide safe, reliable, and affordable electric power to their consumers. And we do that through a variety of means, state and federal government relations, and then also a variety of training programs, conferences, workshops, and topics ranging from electric utility legal workshops to accounting and finance, safety, kind of runs the whole gamut. So I appreciate being invited to speak to this group today. APA was, and our membership is really appreciative that the governor set up the Energy Task Force as a whole, and you know, looking at some of the subcommittees, we're excited about what will come out of these and inform the overall approach. And I know from the statewide association, we want to be involved every step of the way with helping where we can and then informing on as much of the proposals as possible that come out of the committee, because at the end of the day, the electric utilities in Alaska are these sole people or sole entities responsible for providing safe, reliable, and affordable power. And so we want to be really closely involved with anything that goes on. So today, and I won't take up a whole lot of time, but I wanted to just provide kind of like a general overview of what we as a statewide are both seeing and hearing from our members across the state. And this is kind of an amalgamation of stuff that we've been talking with our members about over the years. Some of the topics are probably better spoken to by electric utilities, and I'll note that as I go through this, just to get the better specificity of when they're into those things. But I want to start off by saying all of our members, no matter where they serve in the state, are working very hard to diversify their generation for a variety of purposes and a variety of means, whether that's urban Alaska or rural Alaska. All of our electric utility members are looking at the available technologies and their kind of geography and where they are in the state and what they can take advantage of to diversify that energy portfolio for more security, essentially, so they're not relying on one source for the generation. A lot of this you have to be realistic about in terms of what is reasonably accessible to these electric utilities in terms of the cost and technologies available, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but there's definitely, in Alaska, and I'm sure everyone is well aware of this, and I apologize ahead of time if I repeat something that's been said in past meetings, but our state is extremely unique in terms of energy mix, with a lot of microgrids, essentially, in a state that is a microgrid on the whole. We're all islanded, we're not interconnected to any of the larger grid, but we also have utilities that serve small ratepayer bases compared to what you can find in the lower 48. And a lot of those circumstances dictate what is reasonably possible for a utility. None of our electric utility members want to raise rates in a way that price people out of being able to pay for their electric power. And when they look at these projects, that cost goes into every single thing that they're looking at, because you got to have the lights available to folks 24/7. So I wanted to talk kind of the big picture of what our members are looking at right now that's really taking a lot of their time. Is there's a myriad amount of grant possibilities out there through the federal legislation that's been passed recently, the IIJA and the IRA. But there's a challenge with both of these bills that have, you know, just dozens and dozens and maybe even hundreds of grant programs, is that there's a matching requirement that is insurmountable and very challenging for a lot of our electric utility members. And if you look at some of these grant programs, there's a variety of match requirements. Some are 50%, some are 20%. It just kind of depends on the grant program. And some of these match requirements are significant enough that they could pose a very large challenge to somebody who might win one of these grant awards. And so one of ACA's statewide policy positions has been urging the legislature to create some sort of a mechanism by which the state can help with these matching funds that might be required for grant recipients. And today I couldn't tell you what sort of amount you have to put into this fund. That would probably be some good data to collect from utilities that have applied for these grants and to see what sort of matching requirements might be necessary. But I know from talking to our members that there's some grant opportunities out there that we hope that they're successful, but if they are, they're going to have a large challenge coming up with the grant fund or the matching funds for the grants in a way that doesn't raise their rates so high that it kind of negates all the benefits of that grant funding. And so, like I said at the top, I mean, Alaska is a state powered by not-for-profit electric cooperatives and nonprofit utilities, and they don't have large investor bases to go to get this capital. And so that would be an urging or a kind of a policy position of APA, is that the legislature and the state, in essence, work in partnership very closely with the electric utilities to assist them with these matching funds and almost, you know, kind of partner with them and invest in this electric infrastructure, because you know, electricity is the cornerstone of the entire economy, we all know. And so anything that can be of assistance that will help these electric utilities receive these grant funds and not have to raise the rates unreasonably on their members or their consumers to take advantage of this stuff. And then that's all going to help in the future as these grants get implemented and you kind of benefit from this technology. At the same time, the permitting timelines have to match the timelines for the expenditure of the funds through these grant opportunities. And this is a place where, Robert, I think maybe bringing some electric utilities that are working on this very closely would be advantageous. We have kind of a high-level view from our membership on state permitting, and it's kind of a mixed bag, to be honest with you. I mean, we've heard that, you know, some permits can go rather expeditiously and they're fine, but other permits take quite a while. And one of the issues that has been brought to our attention repeatedly in the past is staff turnover in the permitting agencies that have caused delays in permitting. In fact, one member of ours I was talking to just last week is on their fifth staff member in DNR in 9 years on one permit. And, you know, every time a staff member, of course, switches out, if someone new comes in, they have to relearn the entire permitting purpose, you know, the project and everything, and it's really kind of bedeviling this member and how they get this permit solved. And we've heard this for years now. I was just reviewing some of the feedback we had from 2021 from some of our members when we did kind of a look into what was happening in the permitting realm, and they all mentioned turnover in agency staff has caused delays in a lot of their permits, which of course costs money. The longer you wait to do a project every year, it costs even more money. And that is in concert with, I know, something this committee and the task force has heard about, which is the supply chain issues that our members are facing. And it's just, you know, you hear of the lead times now, especially for transformers. And I know I think many folks on this subcommittee are well aware of how long it's taking, up to 3 years perhaps, to get transformers. We've even had situations in our membership where one of our members had an emergency and they needed transformers, but their supplier could not procure them in less than, I think, 20 months or something. And so luckily we were able to, through the association, put the word out, and another member had some extras that they had on stock that they could send to this other utility as kind of a stopgap. But we definitely, I know our members don't like to operate like that. They don't like to go out and plead for equipment and other supplies. So the supply chain matter is real. I'm not quite sure what the state solution is to that, besides just supporting the electric utilities in the state where they can. But it's definitely something that, when you look at these grant programs that have some of these timelines to expend your grant funds, and then you've got a 3 year or more wait on some of these materials, this is going to cause significant headaches. And APA has mentioned this to the federal agencies that run these permitting or these grant programs about the challenges that Alaska faces. And I know that they understand it, but some of them are kind of hemmed in by what's in the statute for how long these programs have to operate. So looking forward, I think there's a few things that we flagged that the legislature and the state could really help with. And one of them is a program that's been very beneficial, which is Renewable Energy Fund, has been a absolute terrific program over the years. And thank you. I know there's a few legislators on the call for extending that program permanently this past session. That's something APA advocated for, and having that program there is essential. And what a lot of folks don't pay attention to is there's one aspect, I mean, the REF, I'll call it in short, has been beneficial to our members across the state, whether they're rail belt or rural. Many of them have taken advantage of this. But one aspect of this program that not a lot of people focus on is sometimes, especially for a smaller utility, just paying for the feasibility study for a project might be too expensive. And the REF program can help pay for that feasibility study, which then can go, you know, then you have your project feasibility kind of third-party check for you, and then you can use that to go out for other funding, be it grant funding or financing. And so the Renewable Energy Fund is key, and AEA has opened the latest round. It might be advantageous, however, to perhaps speed up the REF process so that maybe the governor can include the ask for the project list in his budget released in December, which gets it in there a little bit earlier and in the process, because now typically, you know, the budget request for the Renewable Energy Fund is submitted somewhere in the middle of session when you have a little bit less time. But if it was submitted earlier in the session, it might be advantageous to utilities for, one, a little bit more certainty. I know nothing's certain until the budget is passed and signed in the law and everything, but just speeding up that timeline is an idea that might be helpful if we can get that appropriation in the budget a little bit quicker. One thing that we've also received feedback from our members on when it comes to helping with cost is the Department of Transportation continuing to allow for transmission and distribution lines to share the right-of-way. And that's really important. There was a move some years ago, and I think it might still be out there, to perhaps DOT was moving toward having those utility infrastructure move outside the right-of-way for a variety of reasons. And our statewide, along with some other folks in the state, have been working with DOT person to not do that, because that's a significant cost savings to ratepayers if those utility infrastructure can share that DOT right-of-way. And it's just advantageous for everybody. It's a cost savings to ratepayers. It's less of an intrusion on the private property. It's a lot less money spent. So, you know, going forward, kind of little things like that are advantageous to keeping the cost down as things move forward. And then I would also, and I'm looking at my list here to make sure I don't miss anything, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the continuation of full funding of the Power Cost Equalization Program, and only using the endowment, the PC endowment, for what is statutorily authorized to be used for. For Power Cost Equalization, you know, we have many members in our membership that are PC utilities, and they are working right alongside that PC payment to lower their cost of energy. But as I mentioned at the top, there's only, you have to live in reality with what these folks, these utilities can afford to do and how long they can do it. I mean, the time frame that it takes to put things together. A lot of these projects, no matter where you are in the state, it's going to take many years to get to a place where the electric utilities are working toward, because you have to pay attention to the cost, the technical feasibility. You have to pay attention to not rushing into a project just for the sake of meeting a benchmark or a goal. You have to be able to provide safe and reliable power at all times, especially in the dark, cold winters we have here in Alaska. And so I kind of got off track on that, but that endowment for PCE is crucially important to be there so that those folks that do rely on the power cost equalization while they're still working on their, you know, bringing their costs down, that sense of security or kind of reliability there is really crucial. So, Robert, let me just scroll up my talking points here to make sure I was trying to give a high-level overview. I think going forward, kind of the bottom line of the upshot is, you know, just like the lower 48, Alaska electric utilities are they're working to, I don't want to say transition energy, but it's more diversify their generation mix. And we're coming to a place in history where the science and the technology is coming to a place where these tools are more available to them in terms of, you know, clean energy, batteries. But it's going to take, in Alaska especially, a lot of caution moving forward because of the financial impact on these small communities and the not-for-profit nature of the vast majority of electric utilities in the state. And so the investment of the state in these systems is going to be crucial to not only bring down the cost and increase energy security, but also keep those rates low or lower and not unreasonably raise them on electric utility ratepayers as all of this generation mix kind of comes to the fore. So, Robert, I think I'll stop there, and I'm happy to take questions. I'm going to hang on the rest of the call, too. Hopefully I covered things, but thanks again for the opportunity, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that overview, and I think I'm sure there'll be some questions. You know, starting with, you know, as we're taking a look at statutes and regulations, I mean, it's easy to go right to the issues, you know, like you mentioned about DNR and staff, and other agencies have the same exact issue. But how would you characterize the statutory and regulatory cost burden of construction of new projects versus what is grappled with on just on an ongoing operational basis? Is that significant and adding to the cost as well?
I think some of the feedback from our members, it really depends on project by project, but I know that there's been some of our members who have given us feedback, and it depends on the project and where it is and kind of where they are in the permitting phase or maybe how that turnover does impact them, but it definitely does add to the cost because any sort of delay is another construction season missed. And of course, you know what the old joke in Alaska is, there's two seasons, winter and construction season, right? And so that factors in. I would say it seems like the new construction, and please, if there's any electric utility folks on the call that want to correct me if I'm wrong, please do so. But I understand that new construction typically can cost a lot more in the permitting realm because you're kind of turning new dirt. You know, you have to educate the permitting folks on what you're doing and how it, you know, plays into the permitting regime. And so there's definitely significant cost that comes with permitting, not to mention the federal side of things too, if you're in that realm. And federal permitting is a completely different animal than state permitting. And I will say our member feedback, oftentimes the federal permitting is a lot more challenging than the state permitting, and that might be because the state permitting is, you know, a lot closer to the folks who are doing it, but there's still that aspect of the cost of permitting and how they factor that into the overall cost of a project and how those permitting delays can increase that cost and maybe even, we hope not, maybe even price the utility out of something, especially if you, like I mentioned, you factor it in with supply chain delays and even workforce problems too. I know that, you know, workforce development is, or workforce is kind of, is an issue that we're seeing. And just having the personnel, the people to build these projects and get them done in time and bring folks in is a challenge as well, Robert.
All right. Thank you. I think it's an interesting question. I would like to hear more from the utilities as we go forward, as to especially after construction of generation and transmission and distribution infrastructure, what is the regulatory burden that's adding to the rate base as renewals and other compliance issues are met? And if they're on the federal side, is there a state opportunity or role to assume any of those authorities or streamline some of those costs? So those are things that I think we'd like to explore going forward as well. So, committee, we've got Mr. Rivera here with his comments. Any thoughts, feedback, questions for the Alaska Power Association? You can raise your hands, or Tony. Go to Tony first, and then I see Garrett, and then another hand. So go for it.
Sure. I'll just touch on a few things, Robert. I completely agree with the items that Michael raised, the issues that he raised. I'd like an opportunity maybe to put more of a focus on the day-to-day impact to the utility. I think there are a few areas that we see. And I started in early 1981, was with regulated utilities investor-owned utilities until 2000, almost 2007, and then the cooperative at MEA since about 2011. But the DOT and permitting is a significant issue. I think the RCA and regs related to the RCA is worth a discussion. I've got a few points I'd like to make there. And I'll just stand down and your call, if time permitting, wouldn't mind expanding on those two.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll circle back before the end of the meeting. And nothing else is to make sure those comments get to us. We can include them into the minutes if we run out of time, so we'll include those. Garrett and Mr. Boyle.
Thanks, Robert. Michael, question I would have for you is maybe can you drill down into specifics? I think I heard a lot of generalizations about, you know, the problems with permitting and costs, but is it possible for you to point to, say, like one specific provision of law, one specific regulation that gives you or your members headaches that we could start looking at and address?
You know, Garrett, I honestly, I think that might be a better question for electric utilities than the statewide. I don't think I could drill down into just one. And a lot of that has to do with, like I mentioned, there's, you know, we don't hear we haven't somebody who's come to us and said, if this would go away, we'd be fine. A lot of it is just kind of anecdotal over time. I'd like to do a little bit more research on that before I spoke on something that would more definitively.
Okay. But that is something that maybe we can work with you and through Michael Baker to get a list of questions for your member utilities to provide feedback on, so we can explore that as well. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Michael. Really appreciate your comments. Certainly with respect to permitting, the mining industry suffers with the same challenges of keeping good staff. But I'd be interested in understanding the details of the 9-year project that was being permitted that had the 5 turnover of 5 personnel. You know, sometimes projects are kind of permitted on the slow roll and not really advanced aggressively. If this was really a project that was ripe and ready, you know, part of the problem is the 5 turnover of 5 personnel. Part of the problem is the 9 years. And the, both of those are problems. And so I'd be interested in learning more about that. Not at this meeting, but if you could somehow get back to us informally or formally as you wish, in terms of whether that 9 years was really on a project that was being actively, aggressively permitted by the utility. So that's one question. Then the other question was kind of a bigger picture one with respect to the grants and your recommendation that the state get involved in matching funds. And I'm just interested if, you know, if you assume that a utility applies for a grant and that the cost of, and then they're required to put up a matching funds, and the financial burden of those matching funds on their rate payers results in an increase in rates, is it generally reasonable to assume then that the that new generation is not as cost effective as what they already had? I mean, I'm just interested now, right? You're saying the financial, because it's a policy thing that this group is really going to have to wrestle with in terms of how aggressively we ask the state to support matching funds. And I can understand that utilization of the state's funds would lessen the burden on those ratepayers. But overall, it really might be that the financial cost, the capital cost of these projects is really not cost effective compared to their current rate base. Is that an incorrect assumption?
I think it's not an incorrect assumption, but it's the challenge that we see from our membership across the state is they're trying to diversify their generation, increase energy security, but that all comes at an upfront cost. And so it's kind of like you have these long tail benefits, but can the individual utility handle the upfront cost of those long tail? I kind of equated like, I'm putting solar on my roof this week, and that's a large upfront cost, but the long tail is going to be beneficial to me, you know, so that went into it. I think what we've seen is there are a number of our members who have looked at some grant opportunities and said, just kind of what you're saying, they said, boy, this is going to raise our rates so much that it's not worth doing, right?
Right.
And I don't have a specific example to give. There's been a few, but that's just anecdotal. But that's been the challenge is that, you know, they're, no matter where they are in the state, they look at how to increase their energy security or maybe increase their clean energy, portfolio. And in doing so, in the long term, you know, there's the benefits from it, but then there's that short term cost that they have to wrestle with.
Okay, well, thank you for that answer, because I think it's going to be real constructive for this body and this task force to grapple with that as we look for ways to actually reduce costs for the state as a whole. So thank you for that. Appreciate your input.
Thank you. Absolutely.
All right. We have time for one more question before we need to move on to the rest of the agenda. But I don't see a hand. I'll just ask one. So, Michael, what are you thinking? You mentioned the PCE program. Is there a position or a thought, or maybe it's too early, to whether the expansion of that program would play a role to, you know, help enable, you know, some of the lower cost goals that we have while some of the task force goals are being achieved? It's going to be an incremental timeline thing, or what do you and your members see as the future of the PCE as in the context of where the governor's task force is going?
Well, I think there are a couple things. There's been a lot of different ideas about how the PCE program could be expanded, so to speak, and to, you know, help with some of these projects. I think our membership gets a little weary or leery, I think is the best word, whenever the statutes for the PCE program are opened or amended. It might be too early. I mean, I could better respond to that if there's a specific proposal or idea. I know in the past, you know, the fear was going back to the days before a robust endowment where it was unclear each year how much money might be available for the PCE program and just the ups and downs that caused out in the PCE communities. And so I think we look upon, APA looks upon some proposals that might significantly modify program, you know, very, very, very closely to make sure that it's going to still maintain the original purpose of PC and that, that, you know, that stream of PC payments. So there's been a lot of ideas out there, and I think we're willing to look at anything and work with our members on how that might be advantageous, but still with some safeguards in there for the program.
All right. Well, thank you, and thank you again for being willing to be our first subject matter expert to present to the committee's first gathering. Appreciate that, and I know we'll have a lot more interaction with you. I've seen your attendance at the task force meetings as well, so appreciate the support and interest.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, so going back to Michael Baker, would you maybe explain for the committee the thought process on the action worksheet and how that might work?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Robert. Can everyone see my screen? I just shared it's the kind of the SharePoint setup for the task force. I just want to draw, before I get into the explanation, I just want to draw everyone's attention to the SharePoint site. And if you go under the main task force, right before the meeting, I set up a folder, Energy Action Worksheets and Tracking. Now, this is for the entire task force, but there's an Excel document in there. And the idea of this document is it's going to create kind of a tracking sheet of all of the action items that the committees are interested in exploring. Think of it as the wish list of, you know, how we're going to get there to meet the overall goal. And, you know, it's meant to be a brainstorming exercise. We can create a final list for, you know, for the next task force. But at high level, I'm just going to walk you through this. I have some columns here that don't need to be filled in yet. They're kind of next steps as the plan gets more formalized and advanced. But very high level, we're just, you know, these six columns here in dark blue, very simple, just kind of the action name. And just from the conversation today, you know, there's probably five or six actions that you could potentially put in here, you know, just as a starting point to kind of dig a little deeper. Action description is just a kind of quick, you know, description. I'm saying 100 words or less. You know, we don't need a lot of research. The research will come through this, but this is just meant to be kind of a tracking log. Implementation timeline, you know, when this action should be implemented, keeping it very simple, immediate, short, medium, long term. But there, you know, this does have some drop down features. You can choose the time frame that makes sense for that action. The lead organization, you know, primary organization responsible to implement that action. For state regulatory reform, you know, it's going to be the legislature most likely, or, you know, administrative code of a state agency. And then partners and collaborators that, you know, may need to be involved. And then the action status. The action status is meant to kind of track whether this is kind of a new action, whether it's ongoing. So ongoing could be existing legislation that we know is in the pipeline that, you know, this task force comes to just note that they're supporting. And withdrawing can be, again, this is, you know, meant to be a brainstorming exercise. If you go through this process at the end of the day, you know, it's not an action that, you know, this task force or committee wants to include in this plan. You know, we can note that we investigated it, but it's withdrawn. And then these fields are standardized across all of the subcommittees. And then, so these are secondary fields that I included that we can fill in, but they're not required at this time. If we know that the action, you know, or policy or program has a specific cost, we can enter it in. It can be approximate at this point. Possible funding sources. Again, we have a subcommittee looking at that, but if we know that there's a grant or program that would fund that policy program or action, we can put it here. If there's, you know, additional research that we may need to do or data we need to pull, let's note it here. And then other barriers to implementation that we need to talk through. Yeah, that's what, there's a column for that. And then we just have these kind of administrative columns with the idea that all these spreadsheets are going to be combined at the end for the subcommittees, but we can assign, you know, if there's a lead, you know, a member of the committee that wants to take responsibility for the action, of course, we're here to support. If we want to set internal due dates, if there's just overall comments, and then just ways that we can complete if this row is completed, you know, or if we need to go further. So this is meant to just give you a high-level framework and something that can be edited in meetings or offline as we advance this. And I just want to pause here. Any questions or feedback?
Michael, who controls the document?
So right now, it's this document's in the SharePoint site. If the subcommittee wishes to make their own kind of informal document that they're going to use to populate this, so the other subcommittees don't want to see it real, you don't want to have the other subcommittees see it real time, we can do that as well. There are folder structures for the subcommittees, and each subcommittee has a folder, and we can place a copy there, but.
And what I meant is who controls the document in terms of additions, edits, changes, and.
So if you're a member of the SharePoint site, you have permission to edit it, and then the way Microsoft works, there's version control, so it'll automatically save version, so we can go back in time and see any edits if something got deleted or removed.
Wow.
Other questions from the committee? You know, I like that working document. One thing I would ask, Michael, is that you would put a link to that site on all emails going to the subcommittee. This is an incredibly busy group of individuals, and I don't want to presume that they've got the time to research stuff, so we won't make it accessible. And as far as I'm concerned, Carl can weigh in, but I'd be happy to have the other task force members have access to this to provide input as well, so I'd keep it open.
Okay, great. We'll do, and we'll send the link right after this meeting. So.
Excellent. All right, anything else on the action item list from the committee before we go on to other next steps? Okay. Michael, we don't have member assignments at this point. I do have a request for our support staff. You know, we're going to be taking a look at statutes and regulations, as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, that we need to streamline. I'm just wondering what the Alaska Energy Authority might have or what the RCA might have for what the existing statutory requirements are, what are the regulatory requirements, permitting requirements. Where does that information reside? I don't know that it's in one place. That's going to be one first benefit of this subcommittee, is that we'll be able to provide that for the state. But we really are not going to have effective time if we're not focused on a list. So how difficult and time consuming will it take to pull it together, do you think?
So I see Karen Bell Karen Bell's on the call. I just wanted to invite her to speak as a.
Hello. I don't know how long it will take to create a comprehensive list. I do need to talk to some people internally. I can certainly speak to, you know, how quickly we could pull things together for programs I'm a part of, like the Renewable Energy Fund, the Power Project Fund. But I can't speak to every regulation out there. But let me speak internally, and I do think we probably need to work a little bit with some RCA staff maybe to also help us identify regulations out there. And I can get back to Michael Baker then and provide a timeline.
Okay, thank you. And I don't know if our members from the legislature have a path forward that can help expedite things as well, or get our arms around the statutory requirements, but we certainly want to reach out there if that's helpful. So, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, thank you. I would really like to hear from Tony on his thoughts on the regulatory picture from the utilities. I,
I really believe that this body, we have not the time to get expert on all the statutes and regulations that relate to utilities and energy and fuel supply in Alaska. So I think we should ask the APA to give us three priorities. I think we should ask, you know, the major utilities to give us three priorities. We should ask the RCA to give us three priorities. And we just focus on understanding how those priorities fit in the midst of the task force objectives. So that's what would be my recommendation, is to ask them to give us the specifics. We can't create them.
Right. Okay. So that adds to the list of assignments. Any other input as far as assignments and information needed before we circle back to Tony? We want to leave a couple minutes for rescheduling our next meeting, so get your calendars out. And then I want to encourage your participation at the next meeting by ending this one on time. So I believe we asked for an hour. Is that what this meeting is scheduled for, correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay. So Mr. Izzo, what would you want to add? We would like for you to supplement the record with you know, with your remarks afterwards as well, but what highlights you'd like to follow up for us on the committee?
Yeah, I guess I like the idea. I like Carl's idea of identifying the top three things. Maybe that's just thinking out loud, something that APA could send out to its membership, and that way we'd get a broad area of input, and maybe look at that list of the, you know, the top five or top three. I think for me, on a day-to-day basis, the Department of Transportation realized that for utility relocations, the federal government pays 92% of the cost. And in statute, utilities like MEA, MSTAR, and others have a right to be within the right-of-way. And yet, in the last five-plus years, all we keep hearing about is, and my engineers deal with this on a daily basis, where DOT is trying to push us out of the right-of-way so they don't have to pay for relocations and onto private property. And so clarification of that statutory right would be helpful. We've dealt with a couple of commissioners, and it is just one of those frustrations. And when you think about the need for infrastructure, it is daunting to think about any project of significant size in terms of the permitting process, and that's outside of the, you know, acquiring control of whatever property is needed outside of the right of way. The next thing that I would suggest for the committee, and anecdotally, nonprofit cooperatives serve 64% of the U.S. population. There are over 800 of them. The vast, vast majority are not regulated by their state public utility commission. They're regulated by a democratically elected board of directors. In typical fashion in other states, it's the investor-owned utilities that are regulated. I say that, though, as a fan of public utility commissions. I support them. I think they provide a necessary balance with a monopoly. I think when they're high-performing and functioning well, they can protect the public. They provide opportunities for input. But I've testified in three states and before FERC, and I have seen much higher performing public utility commissions. I think the people at the RCA are very good, but it would be helpful for me to understand what the I understand they have a difficulty in attracting talent, and that there's compensation issues that are likely statutory. And I think it would be really helpful to benchmark the ability to adjudicate something in Alaska versus other states, because I think they're going to be more and more involved, and they have some serious challenges from my perspective. I mean, Commissioner Kerber, or Chairman Kerber could, you know, speak to this, or maybe another commissioner, but it represents a significant cost in legal fees. It represents costs in terms of lag time, that I think it would be informative for this group to understand. And I'll just stop it there. Those are the two areas that just come to mind today.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, I think Michael Baker can help us bring that national perspective in, and we'll let Chairman Kerber have the final word on that, but he's likely to be our next subject matter expert to present at our next meeting, which we're going to schedule right after his comments. So, Mr. Kerber?
Sure. Thank you for that, for the chance to weigh in a little bit on what Tony said. You know, it was brought up by Michael Rovito about staffing issues affecting the permitting process, but staffing issues are not just unique to, you know, DOT. I think they're affecting all state agencies. If you check the state vacancy rate, that is a checklist. And I think that some issues, I know because I have kids who run small businesses, some of these staffing issues are not just personal to the state government, they're not personal to perhaps the electric utilities, they're affecting everybody. And so I already have a legislative proposal that I'm working through my DCCED chain of command, so to speak, to try to work on our statutory cap to kind of catch it up to what things cost these days. So just, you know, I hear what Tony said, and as a person responsible for the performance and functioning of an agency, I'm keen to get it staffed properly. And that's another thing as we move forward, looking at what changes may be coming in the regulatory scheme or structure as determined by the state. You know, SB 83 was passed some years ago with telecom, what I think was touted as a partial telecom deregulation. That we're understanding as we've gone through our rulemaking document, regulation making document, that it may be more fulsome. So I take that to heart, and I look forward to seeing the minutes of this meeting and engaging with follow-on requests from the subcommittee.
Thank you very much both for your remarks and for joining us and being a partner in this this quest. So, Michael, as we approach the next meeting, is there a need to have it before the next task force, or and do you have a sense of how soon we'll have the next body of work to bring to the subcommittee? What's your recommendation for a rescheduled date?
I think sooner the better. Just so when we meet, we'll have, you know, a fleshed out outline.
Sure. But do we want to try to have it the day before the task force meeting, or we want to have it the day after, or the week before? What's your, do you have a recommendation?
The day before would be fine. If we want to do the week earlier, that's okay as well. I guess my recommendation is to have it prior to the next task force.
I don't like cramming Mondays before I have to travel. I'm kind of traveling up that, so I'd be more inclined to a Friday, which is not this coming, but the next Friday. Mr. Co-Chair, we'll start with you, and then the other committee members would Friday, August 4th, via a window that could be?
I could do that, and I could be pretty flexible on that day, August 4th.
Other committee members, a feeling about August 4th, the same time frame work at 11 or 10:30?
Works for me.
Hearing no objection, can we send out a calendar invite soon, because these busy people are going to fill their calendars up. So,
we'll get that out today.
Great. Thank you. And it's right at the bottom of the hour. Mm-hmm. Final remarks from the co-chair or staff support?
Done here. Oh, thank you.
All right. Michael?
Thank you. That's it.
All right. Folks are serious about getting you out of here on time. Thank you so much. Provide us emails if you have some thoughts about the next meeting, information you want to see. We're going to take this input and move forward, and we'll get you an agenda and call-in information very, very soon, so you put that on your calendar. So thanks for joining us, everyone, and have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
All right, take care.